KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Bayview.
Outer Sunset.
I live in Bernal Heights.
St. Francis Wood.
La Lengua.
Coal Valley.
Alemany Boulevard.
Coming up, the Golden State Warriors are moving to San Francisco. Should Oakland nonprofits be concerned the Dubs will be taking their donations with them?
It is a worry that I know a lot of people have, and we hear that voice.
Then we'll hear how a commission has neglected its mission to protect the Bay.
There's so much junk piled on that boat. If that boat were to sink right now, all of that stuff would just pollute the Bay.
And an annual event that marries joy to danger.
It is not the first person in the water. It is the first three people. Women!
The story of the annual tug of war between Bolinas and Stinson Beach. That and more coming up on Cross Currents. Oakland has given the Golden State Warriors lots of love over the years, and the team returned that love in various ways to the town. The Warriors Community Foundation launched in 2012, and since then, it's donated over $10 million to nonprofits in both Alameda and San Francisco counties. So as the team packs up and moves to the other side of the Bay Bridge, some are wondering if they'll take their charitable dollars with them. KLW's Janae Darden reports.
It's an hour before lunch at the Unity Council's Early Head Start program. Toddlers are sitting around a table, molding their Play-Doh into dinosaurs. I join in on the fun. This Head Start site is one of five in Oakland run by the Unity Council, a nonprofit in the Fruitvale District. These programs prepare 500 kids for kindergarten and provide free childcare services for families in poverty. The center is in the same plaza as the Fruitvale BART station, literally one stop from where the Dubs play. Well, used to play. Guess who gave the Unity Council a grant for their Head Start programs?
Warriors!
That's good enough for me. Yep, the Warriors Community Foundation. Rosie Hera is a manager here. She says over the past 3 years, the Warriors Foundation has given $100,000 to their programs.
Although we receive federal and state funding, that does not cover the full cost of a child. So we do fundraise outside to be able to provide comprehensive services such as mental health, dental exams, nutrition workshops, and other services for the families.
And she says the grant pays for school supplies, including that Play-Doh. The Warriors Foundation focuses on youth and education causes. One reason is that Nicole Lakup, the foundation's board president and wife of owner Joe Lakup, was a school teacher. Hera's colleague Dana Klein-Hesselink works on securing money from philanthropic sources for the Unity Council.
So the Warriors, they've been really amazing at not just contributing cash donations that really are critical for our program success, but they've been really connecting our community, our clients, our staff with other opportunities.
Their staff got to be in the Warriors' 2018 championship victory parade. The team invited teenagers from Unity Council's other programs to a Christmas Day game. And the players gifted each kid a laptop.
The player actually gave it to the young person.
The Unity Council is waiting to hear back about their grant application status for next year. But this year, the Dubs awarded them $35,000. Although it costs millions to run this program, they say losing the Warriors' donation could impact the kids and families they serve.
Are you concerned that when they move, they're going to take away some of the money?
I'm not very concerned that they're going to take away some of the money. They've really indicated to us that although they are moving across the Bay physically, they're really going to try and keep their philanthropic support spread evenly across the Bay Area.
But what she's concerned about for the kids is what a lot of East Bay fans are concerned about: transportation to the game.
We have transportation issues at the Coliseum, let alone someplace where BART doesn't go.
Well, BART does go to the Warriors' current headquarters in downtown Oakland. I meet Melanie Moore, the foundation's new executive director. I ask her what's going to happen to this space when they move.
In fact, we're not leaving it at all. So right now, we're at the Oakland practice facility.
The headquarters has two floors. The first floor is where the team practices, and the second floor has offices.
They have big plans for this place.
As the team moves to Chase Center in the fall, this space will actually be remodeled. So the downstairs practice facility will turn into just an absolute state-of-the-art basketball camps facility with all kinds of technology around keeping stats and helping young players get better.
The foundation is partnering with Kaiser and renaming the headquarters Generation Thrive. The healthcare organization contributed $5 million as an initial investment on the project. Upstairs on Moore's office wall is the draft of a floor plan for the second level.
We're actually going to be remodeling the space to turn it into a nonprofit accelerator. And so we know that a lot of nonprofits in the East Bay in particular, but also in San Francisco, are getting displaced just like a lot of families are getting displaced through high rents.
This level would look like a modern office floor plan with an open kitchen and some meeting rooms and offices, even a wellness space for nonprofits.
You may have been to the Impact Hub in Uptown Oakland. And so imagine a space like that, that is focused around collaboration. So maybe you need to focus on financial sustainability 101. Develop your board. Maybe you need to develop your youth program to take it to the next level. We'll provide space, organizational consulting, opportunities for, you know, connecting with other nonprofits that are going to help you do that.
But it's an accelerator program, more like a residency. Nonprofits can only stay temporarily, so it's not really a permanent solution for expensive office rents, but they'll be providing nonprofits with resources to help them grow.
What are best practices? So one thing we've heard is that, say, a three-month residency, too short. A year, maybe that's about right. So when I say 6 months, it's really, you know, at this point, we're designing and we haven't tested yet.
Moore says the Warriors Foundation has worked its way up to giving $1.5 million a year since it started. That doesn't sound like much for a franchise that, according to Forbes, is worth $3.5 billion, the third most valuable in the NBA. Moore says the foundation is separate from the Warriors Corporation, and their finances are distinct.
So that 1.5 will continue to grow. So as we move to Chase Center and we continue to do more and more fundraising,
they want to give more, but will they still support Oakland nonprofits?
It is a worry that I know a lot of people have, and we hear that, you know, voiced. We've always had the both sides of the Bay focus because we are the Bay's team, and we want to support organizations in the Western Addition as well as in the Tenderloin, as well as in East Oakland and West Oakland and the Fruitvale, et cetera.
Moore says they've kept the donations between Alameda County and San Francisco pretty even every year. But if you look at the graph on the foundation's website, Alameda County causes have received nearly $1.6 million more than San Francisco during the foundation's existence.
Is that going to change to the percentages of the distribution? Will it be more San Francisco focused since you'll be there?
I know that there hasn't been any specific formula that we've been trying to follow, so I don't think that you're going to see a percentage shift per se. We'd love to get to know nonprofits in San Francisco as well as we know a lot of the nonprofits in the East Bay.
And there are plans in store for San Francisco nonprofits, including a Generation Thrive at the Chase Center.
So outside of Chase Center, that whole area around the arena is called Thrive City. And at Thrive City, we're going to have a couple of storefronts that are Generation Thrive in San Francisco. Those spaces are not going to be office spaces per se, but they would be small event spaces for nonprofits.
Wash our hands. Back at the Head Start in East Oakland, the kids are cleaning up for lunch and then a nap. I think about when I was a kid growing up in this neighborhood with three professional sports teams just 10 minutes away. And on a whim, my family would go to the Coliseum for a game because it was close and affordable. These kids won't have that experience. I knew having that access was special, but now that it's gone, I have a deeper appreciation for what we had.
That's KELW's East Oakland reporter, Janae Darden, and that piece is part of the newest episode of KELW's podcast, Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. You can find it and all the episodes on your favorite podcast player and at KELW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, or BCDC, was established in the mid-60s, and its job was to regulate development, prevent destruction of wetlands, and ensure public access to San Francisco Bay. It's an organization that usually doesn't get much attention, but now it's been widely criticized for failing to protect the bay. Earlier this summer, the state came out with a 94-page audit criticizing the commission, and other organizations say this is old news. They've known about these problems for years. KLW's environment reporter Angela Johnston took a cruise around the bay for a closer look at some of these problems, and she joins me now. Hey, Angela.
Hi.
So tell us about this boat ride.
Yeah, so when I first heard about this audit of the Bay Conservation and Development Commission, I thought two things. First, what is the BCDC? I actually really hadn't heard of it before.
Me neither.
And then second, how can I actually go and see what this audit is talking about? So I called up Baykeeper. They're a nonprofit with a mission of monitoring the health of the bay. And they're actually one of the only organizations that has patrol boats going on the bay. So I thought, I need to get on one of those boats. Mm-hmm. They go and check up on polluters and look for violations. And they said they've known about some of the problems the audit points out for a while now. And so they invited me on board their tiny boat to go see some of the examples of BCDC's shortcomings.
Okay, so you go out.
Yeah, I met Baykeeper's executive director, Sejal Choksi Chu, and a Baykeeper skipper down at Pier 1.5 on the Embarcadero. All right, shall we go?
Yes, come on board.
Are you a boat-friendly person?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Do you usually like boats and boat rides?
Well, I thought I did, but then we pulled out of the dock. It was sunny and warm, and as soon as we got out of the little inlet and into the bay, it was a totally different story.
Uh-huh.
Bumpy. Yes. Welcome to San Francisco Bay. It looks beautiful, but it's nice and choppy.
Yeah.
Sounds like one of those rocket boats on the bay.
It was intense, and you may be able to hear it when Choksi Chu tells me why the BCDC was formed and what they do.
So back in the 1950s, 1960s, there were a lot of grand schemes to fill in large parts of the bay and develop all around and develop in the water.
So three women asked the state to create BCDC because they didn't want to see the bay filled in with garbage and development, as was the trend. So the state formed the BCDC, and it gave it the authority to regulate pollution and fill in the bay and ensure public access in and around the bay. Mm-hmm. And by bay, I just don't mean the San Francisco Bay. It's the eight bays that make up the entire estuary, and that's including the Delta.
Okay, so what is the commission's responsibility? What's it supposed to do?
The commission is divided into two parts. There's a planning side. Right now, for example, they're planning for sea level rise by building levees. And then there's a regulatory side. And the regulatory side issues permits on projects and development in and around the bay. And basically, if someone is polluting or developing around the bay in any way, they have the authority to stop them or issue a fine or a permit.
Okay, so what brought about an audit of this commission?
Ironically, it wasn't environmentalists like Baykeeper that asked for an audit. It was lawmakers who were prompted by business owners, and they were complaining that the BCDC was unfairly issuing different types of enforcement. It was very inconsistent. So one business owner would get fined a small amount for a violation, and another would get slapped with a huge fine. One guy racked up over $2 million to try to start a duck hunting and windsurfing club along the bay.
Okay, so let's learn more about the actual audit. What did it find?
Overall, it found that BCDC wasn't doing its job well, and in some cases, not doing it at all. And one of the major things is that there was this huge backlog of enforcement cases.
Okay, so what kind of violations are we talking about? And did you see any on the boat ride?
One of the major unresolved violations that the audit points to is old abandoned sailboats and other boats that are just left to sit in the bay. And on our boat ride, we headed out past Alcatraz towards Sausalito to Richardson Bay to see them. Mm-hmm. And Baykeeper head Sejal Choksi Chu points out the dozens and dozens of sailboats and other motorboats that were sitting there. Most of them were in total disrepair, piled with garbage, old bikes, and gasoline tanks. And some of them were called anchor outs, which means people were living on them rent-free.
If that boat were to sink right now, all of that stuff would just pollute the bay. Here's another one. I think that's a gasoline canister on the back. Hopefully it doesn't have any gas in it. But yeah, that boat.
Tons of trash bags.
Tons of trash bags. Probably in the next big storm, all of those trash bags are going over the water. I mean, into the water.
So yeah, Richardson Bay was full of boats like this.
Okay, ghost boats. What else? What are some other examples?
Other untouched or backlogged violations include illegal dredging of the bay, so scooping the bottom for sand, mining, or other things. Also, the commission had a citizens advisory committee, and the last time a meeting was convened was in 2001.
Oh, wow.
Then there's this abatement fund, basically money from the fines that they collect that's supposed to go toward cleaning up the bay. But the audit found it hadn't been used for that purpose. It had been used for staff salaries and other operational costs.
Okay, so did they offer any recommendations?
Yeah, it offered many of them, more than a dozen, ranging from simplifying this decision-making process for enforcement and creating a new citizens advisory committee, creating new databases. There's a lot.
Okay, and we can post the full version of the audit online, so we can look at all of them. But how did the commission respond to this report then?
Well, as scathing and accusatory as this audit was, surprisingly, the commission agreed with most of it. And while they wouldn't necessarily use the same language, like neglecting responsibility, they say they do agree with the audit's implications and recommendations. I spoke to Brad McRae on the phone. He's BCDC's regulatory director. And he says the commission sat down with the state auditor and said they need to do more enforcement and they need to do it better and faster. He also said they need to be, quote, more nimble and stronger.
Mm-hmm. So what was some of their reasoning for the mismanagement?
Well, for starters, McRae said the sheer size of the bay makes it difficult to stay on top of cases, especially, and this surprised me, since they only have 4 enforcement staff for the entire bay. Mm-hmm. They say they need to dedicate more energy and resources to enforcement so they can start tackling this huge backlog of cases.
Right.
Their enforcement team, according to Brad McRae, is now planning on meeting twice a month, and the first of which is going to be next week.
And if they don't make the changes, what are some of the consequences?
Well, the BCDC is an independent commission, so they don't report to the governor. The commissioners aren't elected by us either, but the legislature is enforcing the audit. So on a political level, if they don't do anything, there would be a lot of friction between the commission and the legislature. Mm-hmm. On an environmental level, the ramifications are even bigger. I asked this to baykeeper Sejal Choksi Chu, and she said, big picture, overall, we're looking at a less healthy San Francisco Bay. So the auditor wants most changes made by 2020, so we'll have to check in about a year to see where things are.
All right. Until next year. Thanks, Angela.
Thanks.
Angela Johnston is KELW's environment reporter. You can reach her at environment@KELW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. We're going to stay close to the water for our final story today. It's where a tradition takes place every July 4th in the North Bay. Yeah, of course, there's fireworks, but we're talking about something different, something arguably more exciting, maybe more dangerous. It's the annual tug of war between the towns of Stinson Beach and Bolinas. It's actually called the Tugs of War. Reporter Ted Muldoon's family lives up in that neck of the woods, and he's got this story from our archives.
It's July 4th, 8 a.m. I'm standing on the beach in Bolinas with my dad.
My name is Brian Muldoon. I'm a several-year observant of this spectacle on the mornings of July 4th.
Since the 1960s, denizens of the neighboring towns of Bolinas and Stinson Beach square off every 4th of July in a tug of war across the lagoon that separates them. Two tugs, actually, the men's pole and the women's pole. They're put together by the local chapter of the Lions Club, whose chief organizer this morning is Bill Barton.
Every year, thousands of people converge on the beach to watch this annual event.
The Bolinas Lagoon flows through a narrow channel at the beachfront. The channel itself is only about 200 feet across, and it's really the only thing that separates the two beaches of Bolinas and Stinson. That, sea lions, and sometimes sharks. My dad notices that the people from Stinson seem to be a little bit more organized this morning.
They seem to do a superior job of early preparations, marking their tow lines, and their team seems to be assembling much quicker. There isn't any sign of such activity here on the Bolinas side, all in keeping with the personalities of each of these towns. So Bolinas is not going to get there too early.
I think the Bolinas side, unfortunately, a lot of the team spent too many hours in the Smiley's bar the night before. I think that hampered their ability to pull.
Smiley's, that's the local bar in Bolinas, the only bar, really. While Stinson Beach has become a popular tourist destination, Bolinas wants to be left alone. Its residents are infamous for tearing down any signage that points the way to their town. The 4th of July is a time of year when these two communities can come together to pull each other apart. The tug of war is a truly ancient sport. It has origins in Egyptian, Greek, and Chinese society, among others. The tug of war was actually included as part of the Olympic Games in the early 20th century. There's even an international governing body, the Tug of War International Federation, that organizes competitions worldwide. There needs to be rules, because the sport can be dangerous. If the rope is mishandled, grisly things can happen, like finger, hand, and even arm amputations. And on the coast here, who knows what you can lose if you're pulled into the water.
Jump on, boss.
I've gotten aboard a volunteer's boat to cross the channel from Bolinas to Stinson Beach. My captain, now in his 60s, has his own cautionary tale about the tug of war from his teen years.
My name is Josh Churchman. I was on it when I was a teenager. You know, used to pull. Too old to pull now. Well, my most memorable year was when the fire marshal from Stinson Beach hooked the Jeep up to the truck and dragged all the hippies from Bolinas into the water. Yeah, the guy right in front of me broke his arm.
Churchman drops me in Stinson.
Hey guys, if you're pulling, come on over here!
Hundreds of people have now gathered on both sides of the lagoon. The Stinson women's captain, Kaysen Splain, is rallying her team.
Stinson Beach on three?
Stinson Beach on three! One, two, three!
Stinson Beach! Let's go,
Stinson!
Over on the Bolinas side, there's some mild concern. A holiday Grateful Dead concert in Chicago has left the women's team out three core members. But the tug must go on.
Move forward a bit, move forward.
The 30 women on either side of the rope throw their combined weight backwards. Momentum comes in waves. Pull for 10-second intervals, lock, rest in place for 10 seconds, and then repeat. 4 minutes in, Stinson is done for. My dad calls it from the other side of the lagoon. Even without the missing deadheads. And now, it's the men's turn. Volunteers work swiftly to reset the rope. The men situate themselves, rubbing off excess sand to improve their grip.
All right, let's keep our grip strength!
Stinson has some burly men on their team, like professional football player Burley. But chief organizer Bill Barton says it's all part of the game.
Well, I know they had some football players last year as well. They import them for the pull.
And here we go. Two years ago, the men's contest took a back-breaking 11 minutes to complete. Today, it only takes 6 minutes for the Stinson men to pull out a win.
That was the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Soon after, the crowds disperse and return to their 4th of July festivities. Barbecues, fireworks. My dad surveys the scene, which moments ago had been teeming with prideful onlookers.
And the lagoon has returned to its placid state.
Until next year, Dad. Until next year. On the Bolinas Lagoon, I'm Ted Muldoon for Cross Currents.
It's a tug of war.
another, it's a tug of war.
The annual tugs of war between Bolinas and Stinson Beach are going to happen tomorrow at the mouth of the Bolinas Lagoon. And if you subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter, you can hear about all events at the mouth of the Bolinas Lagoon. We've got lots more events for you. Subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter and get them every week in your inbox.
It's a tug of war. What with one thing and another, it's a tug of war.
This music is by Sarah Beth Nelson from San Francisco. She's playing at the New Parish in Oakland Friday night. The Cross Currents team includes Jonathan Davis, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Quinn, Eli Wirtschafter, and Alice Wolfley. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.